The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You've tuned in to Columbia Calling, your first stop for everything you want to know about Columbia. How and where to invest, where to visit. From the Pacific to the Caribbean, the Andes Mountains to the Amazon jungle, Columbia has a slice of everything. Shooting from the hip, answering the questions that need answering. Here's your host, the journalist and hotelier Richard McCall, shedding some light on the fashionable South American destination of Colombia.
It's that time of the week again, folks. It's me, your host, Richard McCall, here today in Mompos, Colombia, not Bogota, Colombia. This is episode 218 of Colombia Calling. And yes, it's a hot, sultry, sweaty day in Mompos. It's carnival time. It's carnival in Mompos, carnival in Barranquilla, all over the coast. It's amazing that we're not being drowned out by music, but at some point today, there may be music. And indeed, we have a very special guest with us on the show. He's come in from Santa Marta region. Those of you who know the Colombian coast will know where Santa Marta is, a beach area, just the foothills of the Sierra Nevada. But this man, he lives in the Sierra Nevada itself in a small town called Minca. Minca's a bird watcher's paradise, a nice bohemian haunt. I'd say it's probably about 40 minutes outside of Santa Marta, but he'll correct me on that. And so we're talking to Jay Speller, originally from the UK, but visiting here in Mompos. Welcome on Columbia Calling.
Thanks very much, Richard, for having me. It's fantastic to be back in Mompos after 6 years or so.
I believe it has been 6 years since we were here. So we're here in the heat. We can't put the fan on because it interferes with our recording, but we've got a little bit of breeze and some ice cold beer with us. That helps. Now, you and I were put in contact years and years ago by mutual friends of friends. I believe that they were, there's the fireworks from Carnival. They were having a dinner, I think, in London or somewhere like that. And they said, can you believe it? Some of our friends have just decided to sell up and give it all up and move to Colombia. And my friends had said, well, yeah, we just came back from visiting our friends who did that. So that's how we put in touch. But you came over and, you know, how did you decide that Minca was the place where you wanted to set up, let's say, well, your life?
First of all, Colombia is a fantastic country. And I came, first of all, back for Colombia. Mm. I enjoyed the Santa Marta region enormously when I was traveling around 10 years ago. Mm-hmm. I travelled a lot in my life. Colombia left the biggest impression of any country on me. And so I came back for Colombia. Didn't know exactly where I wanted to set up or how I could do it. But I went back to the Santa Marta area and I was cruising around. And I planned to go back to have a look around the Palomino area, which is now very popular.
Yeah.
I was studying Spanish. I lived with a Santa Marta family. And they suggested I get out of the heat for a weekend and go and see some mountains in Minca. And so I did that. And the rest is history. I went back three weekends running and then just moved there.
So, you knew it. You knew.
Yeah, I kind of knew. As soon as I got there, I had a really good energy and I felt sort of after 30 seconds, I thought, hey, this place is really, really me, you know, and it's got a lot going for it and I really enjoy it here. And it was a bit fresher than Santa Marta. And yeah, I went back for three weekends and then I said, hey, you know what? I'm just going to relocate and...
What would you say then to, like, say, potential people thinking of moving not just to Colombia but overseas and changing their life? What's the best piece of advice you could say? I mean, it was a big plunge. I took a plunge, but I was here as a journalist and a bit longer and took my time. I didn't know if I was going to invest. But your deal was, well, I'm leaving England. I'm going to invest somewhere. And you know, a lot of people have this desire. What kind of piece of advice could you give to someone about that?
That's a very annoying question, actually. But the best piece of advice I give is be open to change. Mm-hmm. Learn a lot about the culture that you're going to, because at the end of the day, you are there. You are always the foreigner in another place, however well you adapt to it. But it's important you learn a lot about the country you're going to and about its people. And from there, you can work, and you can work well if you do that. And obviously, you need to feel good in a place. Home is not necessarily where you're born or where your blood is. It's where your heart is and where you feel like being and where you feel good. And for me, that's Colombia. For others, it may not be Colombia. Maybe the south of France or the coast of Spain, but it's where you feel good.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, because Colombia is an unknown quantity. It certainly was. I mean, Casa Loma, your place in Minca, Casa Loma, is very well regarded. But how did you ingratiate yourself with the local community? Because, of course, you know, it took a while here in Mompox. We're here in Mompox, and, of course, this is my frame of reference. People didn't mind there being a gringo around, the first gringo and stuff, but they were always a little bit wary. Uh-huh. What was I doing? Different things that hadn't been done before. As we started the Casa Maria as a hostel to begin with, they couldn't get their heads around the dormitory. Couldn't get your heads around. And then, of course, we upgraded. And then there was a little bit of a resentment, as if, you know, the foreigner comes in and the belief was that they had, you know, I was taking clientele from them, mm-hmm. which, again, not true. Clientele and tourist base was growing. And, of course, because of the aggressive work we were doing to promote the place. So everyone was doing better. But perhaps they were not doing as well, the local hotels, as we were, because I maybe had a bit more of an international knowledge. But did something like that ever happen to you in Minca? Was there any ill feeling at all to you being there?
Not really, no, Richard. I started off sort of giving free English classes in Minca. And as a result of that, I got to know quite a few people. And obviously, I was learning Spanish by giving them English classes.
Sure.
So, I started off getting to know people in a town like that. I didn't go in from day one and say, hey, this is my massive hotel or anything like this.
Mm.
And when I opened the hotel, gradually I took a couple of people who were young and I felt had some potential a bit under my wing, gave them some English classes. And these guys luckily have been with me from day one.
Really?
Coming up for 8 years.
Wow.
They speak English now, they're running a reception, and really that's the thing that makes me most proud of what I've done. It's not, you know, how many rooms I have, how many people come. It's seeing these guys move from where they were and where they are now in their jobs, and they're doing fantastic for me.
And Minca, in the time you've been there, has really gone through a change. I haven't been in 6 years or 7 years. I must go soon. We're talking about that and getting in the car and doing some driving around Colombia, a little bit of exploring, but it must have exploded in the last 8 years, touristically, let's say.
Definitely, yeah. There's been a big tourist boom that undoubtedly has changed, Richard, there's no question. But at the moment, it's changed in a really nice way still. It's all about ecotourism, nice walks, bird watching, spots by the river, waterfalls, etc. So, you know, it hasn't really attracted a big party crowd or anything like that. It's progressing in a nice way at the moment. I'm sure it has its issues like any boom town in tourism, but it's going well.
But it wouldn't, I mean, it's not a party place. You're not going there for a party. Up into the foothills of the Sierra Nevada with all this beautiful nature around you. You can do that in Santa Marta. You can do that in Palomino, in Taganga. This is appealing to a different type of person who perhaps wants to relax pre-Lost City or post-Lost City trek. But tell us a bit about Minca, because the history of Minca, I mean, some years beforehand, it was pretty hairy up there. I mean, the paramilitaries had some influence and so on.
They did, yeah. A couple of years before I was there, it was just sort of becoming safe for people to go there, just sort of becoming published. But when I first went there, there was really not much there. There was no real infrastructure or places for tourists to hang out. So it was like the rebirth of a town. I felt like I was in the rebirth of a town. There were people that had been replaced with homes in Minca, had been displaced through problems, and there were people that decided to make Colombia their home, some foreigners, a very small number, and there were some people from all over Colombia that decided to move to this new region, the Sierra Nevada, near the coast, from Bogota, from Cali, from Medellin, etc. It felt like a kind of real mix of people, you know. We were working alongside the Minqueños, the guys that were born and bred there, to kind of recreate this town.
No, and so you are now a Minqueño. I mean, that's it. You know, you may say not, but the nice guys here who've seen what we've done in Mompox, They say, oh, you know, you're a Montpossino. You know, you've done so much for the town that you are an honorary person. I think the same they probably think of you. And so you've set up Casa Loma. And, you know, I saw it at the very beginning when you had about four rooms right at the top of the hill. That's what, hence Casa Loma. It's a house at the top of the hill. And you put me in this incredible room with an open balcony with a view right out over this plunging valley. And you go to sleep with the stars and you wake up with the dawn. And it was just, I mean, it's spectacular. But now this is, it's a different story now. You've got accommodation for up to 60 people. I mean, that's a significant growth from what was maybe 10 people back in the day. Tell us a bit about that growth.
Yeah, well, we've been lucky enough to purchase some more land. It's an amazing forest, and we preserve the forest. That's what we're all about. Our accommodation, just to give listeners a sense, is a little bit sort of rustic treehouse type feel. All of our accommodation are sort of basic huts, but they've got fantastic views. It's almost like having your own plasma screen, natural air conditioning. So it's all about being in nature, and obviously. You know, I'm from near London, you are as well, and people look when they're travelling, like I used to, for something different. And where in the world can you hang out in the Sierra Nevada, looking down at the Caribbean Sea, seeing mountains and trees all around, the toucans, hummingbirds? It's a really special place. And so it grew a little bit from where we are, and also from the atmosphere that we try to create. In the hostel, we got good recommendations through this.
Yes.
Even to this day, with all the technology, most people arrive to us by word of mouth, boca a boca, as they say.
Yeah.
And we just tried to create something a bit natural and a bit different from everyone else. We didn't try to compete with the hotels in town. We tried to be ourselves.
Yeah. You do your own thing. Yeah. You focus on your own clientele. You do it well. And then what else is there? This is fascinating. Now, I remember, you know, back in the day, again, I hark back to this old experiences, watching you lugging up crates of beer up there and then only charging like the going rate for the beer. And I was like, God, after lugging it up that zigzag hill, you should charge more. People will pay more for that beer. And you were like, no, I don't want to be like that. I don't want to do that. But now I guess you do that hill, you know, without even thinking about it. You just sort of run up it.
Well, yeah, I'd like to think that. But the hill is still a challenge, I will be honest. I'm a guy that likes a challenge overall. And setting up a hostel on the top of a big hill where there's no road access in a country totally new to me and with a new language certainly was a challenge. And we got there, but the hill still is a challenge to this day. I don't anymore carry up the beers. I drink them occasionally, but luckily I have a great team of people that help me carry them up. But I think that those jobs that I did in the early days of carrying things up really helped me to understand, you know, what kind of work it was to run this place and all of that. And it got me a lot of respect from the locals as well, not being afraid to muck in, as it were.
So just remind my listeners where Minca is and how they get there from Santa Marta.
From Santa Marta, it's about a half hour, 40 minutes in a colectivo.
Yeah.
You can go there from the market in Santa Marta. You pay 8,000 pesos and you can climb up a paved road now. When you were there, it was sort of full of potholes and
rutted,
rocks.
Yes.
Yeah. But now it's a nicely paved road. Colombia's invested a lot in its infrastructure. Minca has benefited from that as well over the last couple of years. You can take a taxi for between 35 and 45,000 pesos, private taxi. So it's very easy now to get there. Back in the day, it was a bit more complicated. But people now can arrive on public transport in colectivo taxis, or they can arrive in a good price private taxi.
And are there all different types of accommodation up there in Minca? So if you've got top end, you know, backpacker, mid-range, there's everything up there.
For sure, yeah.
Okay, it's not just a backpacker haunt.
No, definitely. Okay. There's a couple of boutique places that have opened up that are really nice. There's our place, which is a bit like an eco treehouse style feel. There's regular hotels, bed and breakfast as well in town. Depends what you want, you know.
Yeah.
Many people maybe will stay two nights with us and then take a night in a hotel or something like this, or the other way around. Take a night in a hotel and then come and experience something different. So, there's something for all tastes up in Minca.
So you put the backpackers together and then they go to a hotel. That's fair enough. I say, well, you don't want any untoward behavior in dormitories or anything like that. But no, that sounds excellent. And I am amazed at how much it's grown. We will go later in this year, in 2018. It has to be done. My wife, who's Colombian, has not been up there. And I know that my son would, you know, almost 3 years old, he'd love the rivers and the birds and the jungle. Of course, you know, so congratulations are due. You have a little girl, Alma, who's almost a year old. She is a Minkenya, born in your home up there.
She was born in Minkenya, so I'm very proud that the locals call her a Minkenya. They do call me a Minkenya. I always say Miti Miti, which is half half.
Miti Miti.
And I always tell them that my blood is English, but my heart is Colombian, and they always laugh at that.
I love that.
But yeah, my little girl Alma is amazing. She's going to be a year old on the 3rd of March, and she was born in our house in Minka, so I'm very proud that,
She's more of the land.
Through and through.
Fantastic. Remind me what the website is if people want to check out your place.
Sure. It's www.casalomaminka.com.
Easy. www.casalomaminka.com. Be sure to check it out if you're considering coming to Colombia. Everybody who comes to Colombia at some point or another goes to the Caribbean coast. Santa Marta and the region can absolutely consume your time because it is a good place to visit. We're going to take a short break on this episode 218 of Colombia Calling and be right back with Jace Bella of the Casa Loma Minka. Thank you for listening. And we're back. This is Colombia Calling. I'm Richard McCall. Remember, you can get in touch with us, email, Facebook, Twitter, anything. ColombiaCalling@gmail.com is our email address, @ColombiaCalling on Twitter. Facebook, of course, Colombia Calling. So anytime you want to get in touch with us, if you have potential interesting people with something Colombia-based who can be on the show, I'm all ears. I'd love to hear from all of you. And thank you for your emails and messages in recent weeks. I know that the last couple of podcasts, 216 and 217, the first with Matt Charles, the British journalist who spent time with the ELN and the paramilitaries, and indeed the second one with Pete Watson, who's an academic from the UK studying sort of nation building through football in Colombia. I know they've been very popular indeed, and I'd like to thank those guys for agreeing to be on Colombia Calling, because I've received great feedback on those issues. But we're here in Mompox, sweating a little bit. It's never cool in Mompox. It's carnival time, so there'll be noise at some point today, fireworks, and a fair amount of drunkenness, I would assume. But we're here with Jace Bella, who's taken a break from the fresh foothills of the Sierra Nevada and his Casa Loma, and he's visiting us here in Mompox. So it's great to have him on the show again. And I wanted to talk, if I was to go to Casa Loma and to Minka for 3 or 4 days and relax, but I wanted to stretch my legs and perhaps explore a bit of the region. Would you be able to organize, or would you point me in the direction of good hikes or something like that, or special bird watching routes that you would recommend? I mean, what kind of thing could you tell to someone of my nature, let's say?
For sure, Richard, yeah. I mean, if you want to take a good hike for one day and stop at various different sites, if you left really early, you could do some bird watching on the way, and you could hike past a really nice waterfall, go through some nice forest, reach a nice viewpoint, Mirador, they call it, which where you see all the Caribbean Sea, the city of Santa Marta, and backdrop by all the mountains. And then you could swing down and go past a coffee farm.
Yeah.
Go past another site, which is called Pozo Azul, Blue Pools, where you could have a swim. Yeah. If you have time, you could call in a place called Camaritas and have some nice barbecued meat on your way down to Minka for the afternoon. That would be a nice day, full trip.
Yeah.
You're going to come back tired. And then you'll need to climb up the hill of Casa Loma for sunset. So trust me, that part will be the most tiring of the day. So if you want to do a one-day hike, that's what I'd recommend. If you want to sort of go a little bit further in the region and see the snow-capped peaks, you can't trek to them, but you can definitely go to the best viewpoint, which is called Cerro Kennedy. And from there, you would basically trek up one day, stay overnight in a small hostel near there, and then in the morning you'd trek around 4 o'clock in the morning to arrive for sunrise to Cerro Kennedy, and from there you would basically see the snow peaks, and then you turn your head. And you could see Blue Caribbean Sea, and the city of Santa Marta, and it's really surreal because it doesn't look like it should be in the same view. It looks like two completely different photos, left and right, but they're in the same place, and you kind of have to go to believe it, but it's true. And then you can come all the way back down to Minca in a day. So if you want a couple of days, you can always leave your luggage at our hostel and take a night with us when you get back.
Excellent. And so who are if we were to talk about your clientele, what nationalities do you mainly receive?
From all over Europe, to be honest, states and Canada as well. I guess the biggest country is from Germany. Germany and France, I'd say the biggest two.
Yeah.
Those guys seem to love Colombia.
Yes.
Quite a lot of English as well, but I'd definitely say more German and French people. The states and Canada, because it's nice, it's quite close to the Caribbean coast in terms of flights, so some of those guys coming over. We get a lot of Colombians as well in the holiday times. Mm. So a lot of people from Barranquilla, which is a sort of port city, good for work, close by. But there aren't any really countryside places near it. So those guys often come on the weekends. And I like to mix up the travel at Colombia thing, and you hear them all interacting and practicing Spanish, practicing English. And that's magic when you hear that.
And obviously, dealing with, let's say, Northern Europeans and Colombians, they're different. They demand different things from an experience. What would you say, for example, that the Germans are looking for, and maybe Colombians from Barranquilla? Because I get Barranquilleros here, and obviously first things first, aircon. Of course, of course, we have aircon. It's that hot here; we have to have aircon. And then they want some loud music and a bit of party and stuff. But what would a Barranquillero look for in Minca?
Usually they've got a lot of questions as soon as they arrive, and they're usually sweating when they get up our hill. So they ask all the questions straight away. Once they get into the vibe of our place, which is disconnect yourself, don't look at Wi-Fi, take a chill, look at the sunset, go on a walk. We have Colombians that come and they kind of, they're looking for something different. They're looking to experience what is an eco-hostel, what is this? Mm-hmm. So they're kind of like, after they get into the vibe of the place, they appreciate it a bit. A German will come and literally, most of them are just chilled out. You check them in, show them where they're going to be, and then they'll look at the information book and come and ask for any questions. You do get the odd stereotypical one who will ask you straight away for a map. There's not many maps of the Minca area that are accurate.
It's pretty difficult to
laugh with Germans about this.
It's pretty difficult to map the area.
Yeah.
It's a little bit topographically, let's say, challenging there. Well, that's all right. I get a lot. I mean, I would say my principal tourists here are Germans and French.
Uh-huh.
Few English, but Germans and French. I mean, then beyond that, some Italians, but they don't tend to leave the beach so much. Some Americans, some Canadians. Colombians would make up a big portion because this is a Colombian destination. But, you know, it's easier for me to deal with them with all my Colombian family. They know, honestly, when they walk in and it's a Colombian family, I can play the international card and they like it. Oh, it's an international place. Or I can say to my staff, this is your people, and walk away. But it's just because you just know how to deal with it. But let's talk about, I mean, in the last decade, Colombia has changed immensely, and we're even looking at, I saw a figure come out today that in the last couple of years, I think Colombia's tourism has grown 150%, and we're coming up to the big tourism fair in the 20th, 21st, 22nd of February in Bogota, where I will be, of course, but it's phenomenal to see the change. But this country, with everything, with the way, a peace agreement of sorts has been signed with the biggest guerrilla group, and we're seeing the fallout and the benefits of that. But we're sitting here in Mompox at a time where we're still rattled a little bit by what's going on not far. I mean, a couple of, let's say, 100 and something kilometers to the south, with the ELN declaring this blockade. Hey, Colombia is not a country without its problems, but at the same time, we've had, I think last year it was 5 million tourists. We're getting, several million tourists to a country which is still technically in conflict, and yet we make it work. It's one of those anomalies in life. If you were to say, go to a country in conflict, you wouldn't immediately think about it. And then Colombia, you perhaps now wouldn't think that it was a country in conflict. It's just one of these incongruous things. We can have all of this nefarious and dastardly activity taking place all around the country, and yet, you know, I've still got people booking from Germany, from France, from Italy, from the United States, and yet, so, I mean, I don't know. I mean, what have you, your experiences of this been in the last 10 years? Because it's difficult to put it into context.
It's very difficult. Yeah, day to day, sometimes you wouldn't even think you're in a country that's labelled a problematic country in that sense. Other times, yeah, sure, you'll see an event go by. I think agreements worldwide, like the Schengen Agreement is an example, where certain countries in the world have put Colombia a bit safer politically and a bit safer, marked on web pages of the government to travel to. People have sort of taken a bit of notice of that and are booking more trips to Colombia. I think as well, again, word for word is a big thing, and what happens is people go back to their countries and rave about Colombia and rave about the people and their experience here. And then people assume it's safe, and they book trips here. So
it's weird, isn't it? It's weird. I mean, because, you know, my cousins are here from Canada, and you know, one of the things that they notice is that you know, how heavily pressurized things are. But these are things that don't even I just don't even look anymore. It's like, I know that there'll be a road stop. Yeah, I know there'll be police somewhere. But it's normal life here.
It's funny, I'm used to driving in my old pickup truck and driving past military guys with big rifles, and they'll give me the thumbs up sign, you know, and a big smile. And yeah, they seem like they're there for the good of the everyday running of the country.
I'm curious, though. I'm curious. We knew that this blockade was going to happen. Uh-huh. We knew, you know, the ELN announced it, and they said they'd do it. We know where their strongholds are, sort of Norte, Santander, Arauca, obviously in the Pacific and other border areas. And the military said that they were told that they had to obviously firm up security and everything else. And yet, the ELN was still able to come down the mountain in Norte Santander to an area called Pelaya, which is just not far north of Agua Chica on the main highway from Bogota to the coast. I mean, but we're talking a huge highway. That's the huge Ruta del Sol. And blow up a lane of this highway. I mean, they showed they could come in and do it. And yet, there's a huge military base there. There's huge military presence, and yet it still happens. I don't know. I haven't got a question coming out of this. I'm just sort of talking openly. But what do you see the Colombia? How do you see Colombia confronting this situation? I mean, you're in a place you're outside of Santa Marta. There's military presence, but it's a place that has been difficult in the past. Before you were there, Mompox as well was a difficult place before I was here. Things were already calming down, but you don't ever see it going back to the bad old days.
No, I don't, Richard, personally. Let's hope for peace. I think 99% of Colombians want peace. This is a big thing in the population of Colombia. They're very happy that tourism plays a perfect positive part in the recuperation of the country, its economy. It's good for all the people. It's good for work. It's good for jobs. Good for employment. And I think that most people certainly want to see peace come back. There are obviously some disagreements between certain groups and the government going on at the moment. And yeah, let's touch wood and hope that those get resolved and no more incidents like this happen. But all over the world, you get small groups popping up and problems of all sorts in different countries. Europe's no stranger to this at the moment. And so, yeah, I think sadly in the world, these things do happen.
It does. Now, I've got in my hands the South America on a Shoestring guide from 1980. Wow. And I've got the Colombia section. I saw this in a secondhand bookshop in Bogota, so I bought it. And Colombia, this is to show you as I flick through. Colombia only occupies how many pages? I think it's up to there. So from page 482 to 525, so we're looking at 50-odd pages. That's wow. Colombia. Yeah. Because obviously 1980 were the bad old days in Colombia. I don't know if there's a mention of Mompox or Minka in here, but I'm flicking through to have a look. And it's hilarious to look at this because, you know, you're getting one tiny paragraph for Cali or Medellin. Hang on a second. Let's have a look. What have we got? Venezuela. It's Cartagena. It is Cartagena. So we've got Cartagena, which is now would take up the most part of a guidebook. The map is hand drawn. Look at that. It's hand drawn. And then we've got places to stay. I don't even know if these even exist anymore. Hotel Roma. Yes, it does, doesn't it? And there's no mention of anywhere around here. It's hilarious. It's just, that's how much Colombia has changed. I mean, you know, I mean, we're looking at 30 odd years plus, but things have changed completely. And I don't think there's any going back. I think that's what we're looking at right now, is that there's no going back. Colombia has come forward far enough to keep on progressing. I'm bullish about Colombia. I give talks about once every couple of weeks to groups of tourists in Bogota about the politics. This is my particular interest in Colombia, and I give these talks, and they always say you paint quite a bleak picture. Yes, but you know more or less I've been contracted to paint this bleak picture, but I'm still bullish on Colombia. I think that every year that passes, we push back. We push back just a little bit those frontiers and make the country just a bit larger each time, you know? And the BRAC guide that will be coming out later in the year will be, you know, we've got Guaviare in there, we've got Caquetá in there, we've got Putumayo in there, and Vichada, and places that weren't written up before, and you wouldn't ever consider writing them up. And, of course, Minka gets several pages, I think, now, and look at this, 1980, there's not even a mention of the town, and there's no mention of Mompox either. I mean, it's incredible. This is to show that things can change. Colombia can change, but it's generational. It takes a long time. And I don't know, in the time that you spent here, how you felt towards it. I mean, do you think that it's because there's a new generation coming through? Do you think there's a fatigue towards the conflict and all of this rivalry? I mean, we're in 2018. There's an election coming up in May. It's a big one. I mean, what are your feelings about this, Jay? You live in Colombia. I mean, you can't vote. I can't vote, but we certainly have opinions, I'm sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's a very graphic way to show the progress, actually. I can see the listeners can't. But yeah, it's phenomenal from 80 to the guidebook to today. I mean, Colombia's the third biggest country in South America. It has everything. If you look, it has two oceans. It's the only country in South America that has two oceans. It has mountains, snow peaks near the sea, great colonial towns like where we are now, and Cartagena and Mompox. It has rivers and everything. And when you combine that with the people, for me, the attitude of the people is, yeah, most of the people want change. Most of the people want to move on. Everyone wants to live well. And when you live in a fantastic, beautiful place like Colombia, the idea is to work, live good, and I think that 99% of people have seen that tourism is a big help for this, and people are progressing because of tourism. Colombia now gets much more than 15 pages of in this book, and rightly so.
It's ridiculous.
It's absolutely. I would say Colombia has everything. It's a really incredible place to visit, and people should know about it and should read about it.
But I'm looking at this book as you're talking, and there are write-ups on like Puerto Leguizamo and Tierra Adentro, which then became places that were so off limits during the 80s and 90s, and are only coming back now. I mean, that's what's so interesting about it. It's like, you know, at some moment they decided that's okay, we can put that in the book, but we can't put the rest of it in the book, and yet it's just one of those things. And so I just want, what's it say? Colombia is one of the most quixotic of the Andean countries, with a character and history as wild as its geography. It runs the whole gamut from the sparsely inhabited jungle-covered lowlands to the cool, fertile, high valleys sandwiched between the three main cordilleras which fan out across the country. I mean, they've written, that's a beautiful entry. And then you go half a page on and it goes, there is, however, a darker side to the Colombian character. More than any other South American country, Colombia still preserves some of the more astringent aspects of medieval Spanish machismo. So they're not even talking about the violence in Colombia, the conflict. They're talking about sexual repression. I find it very interesting the way how things get written up in these guidebooks. And then, warning, Colombia, like Peru, is notorious for rip-offs and muggings. And then, so why would you even include it if you're not going to write anything? It's really interesting indeed, but things have come so far ahead. That's why I keep this book, because when I feel down and I think, oh God, Colombia, you know, it's such a problematic place. So what, you know, what could Colombia have achieved if they weren't busy killing themselves? But then I look at this and it has come forwards, you know, it has progressed. I'm trying to think. Even 1980, even the what do you call it? The platypus, the grandfather of all hostels in Colombia is not even in this book. You know, Herman Escobar is not even in this book. We're talking pre-Herman, the guy who started, let's say, tourism to Bogota. But it's just fascinating. So you know, you can look back and find out that yes, things have been worse and things are getting better, and I think that's what we take from this. And I mean, in your, all of your time in Minca, I'm sure it comes down to casual robbery, you know, someone leaving something somewhere, maybe a camera being snatched, a bag. But if it's left, you know, opportunism, maybe someone came up from Santa Marta. The same here in Monpos. No one's out there looking to rob. No one's out there. People, generally speaking, are very good people and love to see tourists. And that's what we're seeing. And that's the progress we're seeing. And so I don't know, I mean, off the top of your head, I mean, you've been, I'm sure you're watching, election watching at the moment. Do you have any potential prediction for what's going to happen in May 2018?
No, I don't. They say in Colombia everything is possible. So no, I think that Colombia will keep on progressing, whoever gets in. I think the last president's put a lot of emphasis on international relations and a lot of emphasis on infrastructure, transport-wise. It'd be interesting to see what the next president does, but no, I don't have a crystal ball. I can't tell you the name of the next president. Let's just hope it keeps on progressing in the way that it has.
Yeah, what do we want? We want business-friendly, socially active, infrastructure-minded, but socially active. I mean, we need to get Colombians to be at peace with themselves, with one another. But who knows? I mean, I say this week in, week out, but I genuinely believe that Colombia changes because of the people itself. And
absolutely.
And we've got new generations coming through who have not grown up in the worst years of the conflict, and so therefore are ready for reconciliation and are ready to discuss these things. But who knows? Who knows how it's going to go? Because you know, this hatred and this fear—it's deeply ingrained. That's the difficulty.
But it's interesting you say that about the people. Just the other day, I was talking to a Colombian lady about the difference between where I'm from in Europe and Colombia, and I said, "Do you know what? For me, the people are what move Colombia, the people are what move this country. And in our country, sometimes the systems are there and everyone just follows the systems.
Yeah.
Here, sometimes the systems are a little bit disorganized, a little bit paper-based, but it's the people that really move this country. And so I agree with that. The people do want to progress, they do want to change, they do want to move on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think so too. Let me take this moment to say thank you to Jay Speller of the Casa Loma Minca. That's www.casalomaminca.com. Thank you for being on Colombia Calling.
Thank you, Richard. Pleasure. Thank you for having me back in Monpos.
Oh, no, you're always welcome. You know that. And thank you for sharing your thoughts. And I know that people thinking of moving overseas or visiting Colombia will have taken heart from what you've said. And, of course, you know, the inspiration that you can give them, you know, in that kind of thing. You know, be ready for change. Be ready for different issues and so on and so forth. This is a great country. And, you know, moving overseas, it may not be for everyone. everyone, but you know, Jay's made it work, I've made it work, there are plenty of us who have made it work, and so yeah, thank you for your time.
You're very welcome. Thank you, Richard.
You're most welcome. This has been Columbia Calling. I've been Richard McCall, episode 218 of this podcast. I know you've enjoyed this show. We'll be back next week. I have got a young gentleman, Colombian gentleman, who has a socially progressive company where he makes leather, quality leather bags, which are made by former guerrillas, reintegrated guerrillas into society. He's decided he wants to give back. He's from a very wealthy family, very wealthy background in Colombia, and this is part of that new generation, I think. So we'll be back next week with episode 219, talking about something Colombia related here on this podcast. So thank you again for listening, and farewell. Bye-bye.